Right now, somewhere out there, someone is sitting in their living room playing an offline video game.
Right.
And at the exact same time, a major tech CEO is literally being hunted internationally.
Yeah, it's wild.
And meanwhile, a former Cold War nuclear site is being transformed into this $100 billion AI powerhouse.
Completely different worlds.
Exactly. I mean, on the surface, those sound like three totally unrelated events. But today we're going to look at how they're actually, the exact same story. So welcome to today's deep dive.
Got to be here.
Yeah, whether you're prepping for a big meeting or just trying to stay afloat in this crazy tech landscape, we're glad you're with us. We're analyzing a very specific snapshot in time today, Thursday, July 30, 2026. And
Right.
our mission here isn't just to like read you the daily headlines.
Yeah, nobody needs that.
Exactly. The goal of this deep dive is to extract those underlying aha moments. We want to pull out the single thread connecting all these sources because what we are really watching right now is a massive global tug of war over digital power, infrastructure, and, well, ultimate control.
Yeah, and the scale of that tug of war is just it's staggering. Especially when you look at the actual physical footprint required to even participate in it right now. Because before we even touch the software side of the AI revolution, the algorithms and the models, the hardware realities are just hitting these absolute
Oh,
extremes.
for sure.
I mean, we're looking at this proposal from Brookfield Asset Management and NextEra Energy. They want to build a $100 billion AI campus.
100 billion.
Yeah, in Paducah, Kentucky. And this single facility is designed to feature 1.2 gigawatts of compute capacity.
Wow.
And to support that, they have to build 4.6 gigawatts of dedicated power. And that's going to be a combination of natural gas and massive battery storage.
I mean, the logistics of just dropping 4.6 gigawatts of new power generation into a single county are mind-boggling.
Oh, absolutely.
For you listening, you probably already know we aren't just like plugging some servers into the existing grid here.
Right, the grid would collapse.
Yeah, you're talking about fundamentally rewiring regional energy infrastructure, upgrading high voltage transmission lines, managing thermal runoff, building highly specialized substations. You are essentially building a private utility company just to keep these data centers humming.
And, the location itself is just soaked in historical irony.
Oh, the Paducah site.
Exactly. It's a former Cold War era uranium enrichment site.
Right.
It literally produced nuclear fuel and weapons components. It shut down in 2013, underwent like $1 billion in environmental cleanup.
And now here we are.
Right. Now it's being repurposed to fuel the 21st century arms race. The barrier to entry in artificial intelligence has officially escalated way past venture capital. We've hit the nation state level. Just training a single state-of-the-art frontier model today, it requires a cluster of perhaps 10,000 NVIDIA H100 GPUs.
Let's actually run the math on that real quick, just because it really contextualizes the scale of this Kentucky project for you.
Sure.
A single H100 GPU costs around what, $30,000?
Roughly, yeah.
And it draws about 700 watts of power under load. So a 10,000 GPU cluster is $300 million in silicon alone.
Just for the chips.
Right. And it's pulling 7 megawatts of power just to light up those chips. By the time you add the optical networking to connect them, the storage arrays and, the massive liquid cooling infrastructure you need to keep them from literally melting.
And capital requirements are just astronomical. And
Exactly.
you're hitting on the exact reason why a 4.6 gigawatt power plant makes sense to these asset managers.
Yeah.
But there is this massive tension here.
The environmental elephant in the room.
Exactly. The pursuit of compute dominance versus the environmental cost.
What?
Because the battery storage they have planned for Paducah,
Yeah.
that is strictly for grid balancing.
Right, smoothing out the demand
Yeah.
spikes.
The foundational baseload energy source running this entire $100 billion campus is non-renewable natural gas.
Which is wild.
It is. The industry is quietly just accepting this staggering increase in its carbon footprint. And they're doing it because the geopolitical and economic cost of losing the AI race is deemed, higher than the environmental cost of burning fossil fuels.
I look at that compromise and I just wonder how long it can hold.
Right.
Because if you're spending $100 billion on infrastructure like the Kentucky campus, the immediate question for the market is, how on earth do you make that money back?
That is the trillion-dollar question.
Right. Which leads us directly into the Q2 2026 earnings reports we just saw from Microsoft and Meta.
Oh, this is a brilliant case study in unit economics.
It really is.
because Microsoft's numbers are a pure testament to finding immediate product-market fit. They reported $90 billion in quarterly revenue.
Wow.
Which is an 18% year-over-year growth, and their stock surged 8%. And the main driver there was a 43% growth in Azure, their cloud service.
Which just crossed a massive milestone, didn't it?
It did. It crossed the $100 billion annual revenue threshold for the first time ever.
That's incredible.
And at the same time, they announced an annual capital expenditure of $115.9 billion.
See, normally the market completely panics when a company announces they're spending $115 billion on servers and infrastructure.
Usually that's a red flag.
Exactly. But investors rewarded Microsoft because their B2B model fundamentally works. Microsoft is selling Azure AI Compute and Copilot subscriptions directly to enterprises.
Yeah.
Like if I'm a Fortune 500 company and Copilot makes my developers even just 10% faster,
you're thrilled.
I will happily pay $30 a month per seat. The subscription fee vastly offsets the compute cost of running the model on their end.
But then you contrast that with Meta's earnings call.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this because Meta's situation is so different.
Totally different. Meta forecasted their 2026 capital expenditure to be between $130 and $145 billion.
So even more than Microsoft.
Yeah, but they saw drops in both operating income and net income. And the stock initially took a 7% hit. Because the unit economics of consumer AI are just brutal compared to B2B.
Oh, totally.
In a traditional social media model, serving an ad costs a tiny fraction of a cent in server compute. But when you integrate a multi-billion parameter AI into Instagram,
generating that personalized response costs significantly more in compute power than whatever ad revenue they get from that single interaction.
Exactly. The monetization path is deeply murky. And the frustration on the earnings call reflected that exact uncertainty.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, one analyst outright asked Meta leadership, do we just need to be a bit more patient?
Which is a very polite way of saying, what are you doing?
Right. Investors are struggling to swallow a $140 billion burn rate without a clear way to make it back because Meta is just pouring this capital into open source Llama models, the metaverse, and consumer app AI.
You know, people keep using that old business cliche, right? They say Microsoft is selling shovels in a gold rush while Meta is digging for gold.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
I think that analogy is totally broken here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Microsoft isn't selling shovels. They are running the private utility company charging by the watt for electricity.
Fair point.
And Meta, they are basically building massive state-of-the-art sports cars and giving them away for free to every consumer on Earth.
Hoping to eventually invent a new type of toll booths to put on the highway.
Yes, exactly. But I would push back on the market's impatience with Meta.
How so?
Look at the historical precedent with WhatsApp.
Oh, right.
When Meta acquired WhatsApp, critics spent years saying they wildly overpaid. They said they had no viable way to monetize end-to-end encrypted messaging.
True. That was a big narrative.
Fast forward to today, and WhatsApp is this essential, highly monetized pillar of global business communication. I think Meta is playing a decade-long game with AI. They know if they own the foundational consumer interface, the monetization will follow.
That's a good point. But the risk in that long game is just the sheer velocity of the capital required to stay at the frontier.
Yeah.
And that structural problem with monetizing consumer AI, it isn't just a Meta issue. We are seeing the absolute ceiling of the consumer market being hit by the very company that invented it.
OpenAI.
Exactly. They announced that ChatGPT is approaching 1 billion weekly active users.
Which is insane. That puts them in the rarefied air of like YouTube and WhatsApp.
It does.
Yeah.
But the critical context here is that they are hitting this milestone nearly 7 months behind their original late 2025 target.
Right. The explosive exponential growth curve has basically flattened out.
Yeah.
And the sources point to market saturation. Essentially, everyone on Earth who actively wants a conversational AI interface already has one.
Exactly.
But the biggest unforced error was the fall 2025 release of GPT-5.
Oh, the reception to GPT-5 was a massive reality check.
Yeah.
Users aggressively pushed back. They called the model too cautious.
They felt like it lost its spark.
Exactly. The effort to align the model and make it universally safe resulted in a loss of emergent creativity. Developers found it struggling with complex lateral thinking tasks that the older GPT-4 architecture handled with ease.
Which is wild to think about.
And even though OpenAI patched those issues over the following months, You only get one chance to make a first impression with a major version bump.
Right.
That stumble really fractured user trust.
And a fractured user base in this industry leaves the door wide open for disruption. Which brings us to a company like DeepSeek.
Oh man, DeepSeek.
Yeah. On July 20, this Chinese AI company officially pushed their V4 model into general availability. And we are talking about a model that just scored a 93.5% on LiveCode Bench.
Which is incredible.
For you listening, LiveCode Bench is notorious. It uses real-time, newly published coding problems to prevent models from simply memorizing the PEST data.
You can't fake it.
Exactly. Scoring a 93.5% requires actual synthetic reasoning. So how are they doing this?
Well, the technical architecture behind DeepSeek V4 is what allows them to compete at this level. They utilized a mixture of experts, or MoE architecture, with 1.6 trillion total parameters.
Okay, 1.6 trillion is huge.
It is, but MoE is incredibly efficient. Instead of firing all 1.6 trillion parameters for a single query, which would require, you know, massive compute, the model acts kind of like a triage nurse.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah, it analyzes the prompt and activates only the specific smaller subnetworks or experts needed to answer that specific question.
It's brilliant resource allocation.
It really is. Furthermore, they tackled the context window bottleneck. DeepSeek V4 boasts a 1 million token context window.
A million tokens, that's a whole library.
Yeah, and they achieved this by reducing their KV cache memory consumption by 90%. Using a hybrid attention architecture.
Wait, 90%? That's a massive reduction.
It's huge. The KV cache, which is the memory the model uses to keep track of previous tokens in a conversation, usually eats up massive amounts of RAM.
Right.
By shrinking that footprint by 90%, they allow developers to feed massive data sets into the prompt without needing prohibitive amounts of GPU memory.
Wow.
They were actually so confident in this architecture that on July 24, they deprecated their old API names entirely. Yeah. They basically forced all their developers over to the V4 endpoints.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting for me. This completely flips the economic script.
Oh, absolutely.
Because while Microsoft and Meta are spending over $100 billion a year building these proprietary fortresses, DeepSeek released V4 under an MIT license.
Totally open source.
Entirely. A developer can take it, modify it, build commercial products on it, all for free. And if you prefer to use their hosted API, they are charging half the price of GPT-4.
Yep.
I look at this and I just see a weaponized business model. How does giving away your crown jewels for free make any economic sense?
Well, it is the ultimate strategy of commoditizing your compliment.
Okay, unpack that.
By releasing a frontier class model for free, DeepSeek destroys the pricing power of Western proprietary models.
Oh, I see.
Think about it. Why would an enterprise pay premium rates for Azure OpenAI services if they can host a highly capable open source model themselves for just the raw cost of electricity?
Right.
DeepSeek builds immense global goodwill. They attract the best open source R&D talent to refine their model for free, and they economically bleed their competitors.
It also completely circumvents the geopolitical containment strategy the United States has been trying to execute.
Oh, 100%.
Because the U.S. placed strict export controls on advanced semiconductors, right?
Yeah.
To choke off China's access to the hardware needed to train these models.
Exactly.
But DeepSeek's V4 proves that algorithmic efficiency, like their MoE and hybrid attention breakthroughs, can outsmart hardware blockades.
And if algorithms can bypass physical chip embargoes, the concept of national borders in the digital age starts to look incredibly porous.
Yeah.
And when borders look porous, governments inevitably panic. They realize they can't control the math. They can't always control the hardware. So they start targeting the only physical thing they can still reach.
Which is the humans running the platforms.
Exactly.
Okay, so look, before we dive into this next source about that very thing, I need to make the guardrails of this deep dive crystal clear for you.
Yeah, that's crucial here.
We are strictly analyzing the geopolitical mechanics and the timeline of events presented in the source material. We take absolutely no political sides regarding the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
Right.
And we are not endorsing the claims made by the Russian government, nor the counterclaims made by the individuals involved. We are just looking at how nation states are attempting to exert control.
Right. So with those parameters in place, the event in question occurred on July 29, 2026.
Just a few days ago.
Right. Russia's Federal Security Service, the FSB, formally charged Telegram founder and CEO Pavel Durov with facilitating terrorist activities, and they placed him on an international wanted list.
Wow.
The core allegation from the FSB is that Telegram failed to remove channels and bots that were actively being used by Ukrainian intelligence and extremist groups to coordinate attacks and cyber fraud.
And Durov, who currently holds citizenship in France and the UAE, he vehemently denied the allegations.
He did.
His stance is that these charges are fabricated pretexts. He claims the Russian government is weaponizing anti-terrorism laws to suppress free speech and privacy rights, and basically to force him into handing over encryption keys or creating a backdoor into Telegram servers.
And the historical context here shows this massive escalation in government tactics.
Right, because this isn't the first time they've clashed.
Not at all. In 2018, the Russian government ordered ISPs to block Telegram entirely.
Which didn't work out so well for them.
It was a massive technical failure. Russian citizens just routed around the block using VPNs. And ironically, government officials themselves continued to use the app.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the ban was humiliatingly lifted in 2020. So having learned that you cannot effectively ban decentralized software by blocking IP addresses, governments are shifting to personal legal coercion.
That shift from targeting IP addresses to targeting CEOs through international extradition treaties is just, it's a chilling reality for anyone running a global network.
It really is.
It is the ultimate push for what nations call digital sovereignty. You know, the EU uses GDPR fines, India outright bans Chinese applications, Russia uses the FSB.
Exactly.
And I look at the physical requirements we discussed earlier, the Kentucky campus needing 4.6 gigawatts of power, the reliance on government-permitted submarine cables, the massive land acquisitions, and it seems obvious to me, the era of the untethered, independent tech CEO is dead.
Completely dead.
You cannot build $100 billion physical infrastructure without becoming a vassal to the host nation's political demands.
The physical tethering is absolute. When your data center requires the energy output of four nuclear reactors, you are inextricably linked to the host nation's energy grid, their environmental regulators, and their national security apparatus.
Yep.
Tech companies used to operate in this this ethereal layer above the physical world.
The cloud.
But now, the sheer mass of the infrastructure required to run the AI economy has dragged them firmly back down to earth. They're trapped between their users' expectation of privacy and the host nation's demand for visibility and control.
So you have governments desperately trying to build digital fences and tech giants building gigawatt monopolies to control the AI layer.
Yeah.
But, and I love this pivot, actually, there is a fascinating, completely organic counter movement happening at the absolute lowest level of the ecosystem.
Right on the individual consumer's hard drive.
Yes. It is a story about control being handed back to the user, and oddly enough, it centers around a video game.
The situation with Capcom and Monster Hunter Wilds. It provides a perfect microcosm of this consumer pushback.
I agree.
So Capcom announced that the prologue demo drops on August 5.
Okay.
But the philosophically significant news is update 1.042, which arrives the day before on August 4. They announced that players can transfer their demo, save data, directly to the full game, which is, you know, just a standard quality of life feature. The real news is the second part of the update.
Crucially, update 1.042 makes all 26 event quests in the game playable completely offline.
Yes.
Prior to this, accessing that content required a constant handshake with Capcom's live servers. Now, for someone who doesn't play video games, this might seem trivial, but it cuts to the heart of the digital preservation movement.
It addresses a deep, deep anxiety over ownership.
Oh, for sure.
Modern video games are $70 investments, yet they increasingly rely on centralized live servers just to boot up the main menu, even for single-player content.
It's infuriating.
It is. The consumer is no longer buying a product. They're paying $70 for a temporary license to access a server. And when that server becomes too expensive for the publisher to maintain, it gets shut down. And the software the consumer paid for essentially evaporates.
So what does this all mean? Capcom's decision to patch the game to run locally means that 30 years from now, long after the Monster Hunter Wild servers have been decommissioned, someone can still boot up the game and play those quests.
Because the code lives entirely on their local machine.
It survives. And I find the timing of this so poignant when you view it next to everything else we've discussed today in this deep dive.
Yeah.
We are watching this massive, centralized power grab at the top of the food chain, met by this quiet, stubborn demand for local autonomy at the bottom.
It really is the defining tension of the current technological era. Consumers are watching global AI companies build closed models inside gigawatt data centers, and they're watching governments threaten tech founders over server access.
Right.
So the natural reaction to that immense centralization is a demand for decentralization.
Yeah.
Whether it's developers downloading DeepSeek's open source weights to run locally on their own hardware, or gamers demanding offline patches for their software. People want assurance that their digital existence isn't at the mercy of a corporate board or a federal agency.
The physical reality of the internet is finally pushing back against the illusion of the cloud.
Well said.
So let's trace the arc of what we've unpacked for you today. We started at the macro extreme, right? A former nuclear site in Kentucky requiring 4.6 gigawatts of power to run a $100 billion AI campus.
Massive scale.
Then we analyzed the brutal unit economics, forcing companies like Meta to rethink massive capital expenditures, while Microsoft reaps the rewards of enterprise B2B sales.
Yep.
We saw how open source algorithms from DeepSeek are outsmarting hardware embargoes, which leads to panicked governments targeting humans like Pavel Durov.
Right.
And we ended with the micro pushback of a consumer retaining offline control of their software. The connective tissue of July 2026 is that technology is no longer just a tool. It is the primary battleground for sovereignty and control.
And the stakes have escalated beyond anything we've seen in previous tech cycles.
Yeah.
I mean, the line separating software engineering from geopolitics and physical infrastructure, it has been completely erased.
It really has. Which leaves me with a final thought I want to leave you with, looking beyond these headlines.
Okay, let's hear it.
We are currently pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into building these centralized mega infrastructures, right? Like the Kentucky campus. And we're doing it operating under the assumption that the ultimate AI breakthrough will be hatched inside a massive, heavily guarded corporate data center.
Right. That's the prevailing logic.
But at the exact same time, we are watching the explosive capability of free open source models like DeepSeek. And we are seeing a fierce consumer demand for local offline computing power.
Yeah.
So what happens if the ultimate world-changing intelligence doesn't emerge from a gigawatt facility at all? What if, instead, the next paradigm shift emerges from a decentralized swarm of millions of offline consumer devices communicating locally and operating entirely outside the jurisdiction of any government or the profit model of any corporation?
A decentralized swarm of intelligence bypassing the data centers entirely.
Exactly.
That completely invalidates the $100 billion infrastructure bet.
Something to keep in the back of your mind the next time someone tries to sell you a subscription to the cloud.
For sure.
The real revolution might just end up living on the hard drive in your living room. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, and we will catch you next time.